You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to tonight's live broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is Saturday evening, May the 1st, and from a contributor to Countercurrents, Dr. F. Roger Devlin, to the editor-in-chief himself, Dr. Greg Johnson, we go. It has been a fantastic evening so far, sure only to get better as we welcome back our friend, Greg Johnson, editor-in-chief of Countercurrents. He is a prolific author as well. You can get his titles at the website that I am currently at as we speak, counter-currents.com. Among them, Towards a New Nationalism, It's Okay to Be White, the Best of Greg Johnson, White Identity Politics, and Others. Greg, great to have you back with us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's indeed always a pleasure and always a great hour of content when you're featured. So we had talked to you last week right after the verdict came handed down. The verdict was reached in the Derek Chauvin trial, and we had a scheduling conflict, so we're happy to have you tonight. We did cover that for about 2 hours last week, so I don't want to go into it extensively, but we'll use this as a jumping-off point for further discussion this hour. You had some great takes, some of the best I read in the wake of that verdict. Would just like to give us a quick once-over on your thoughts as they have perhaps even matured over the course of the last few days?
Well, yeah, I was pretty appalled by the Chauvin verdict. It didn't surprise me that it happened, but it shouldn't have happened the way it happened. I followed the trial fairly carefully, and I thought the evidence presented for reasonable doubt, acquittal, was very strong. I thought that nobody could rationally convict him of anything. Instead, they convicted him of three things. They convicted him of intentional and unintentional murder. It was ridiculous what happened. And
we talked about that, yeah.
But what happened was this, that the jury had to realize at a certain point what was going on. Namely, the state was throwing one of its own people, one of its own functionaries, a police officer, to the mob to appease them. Well, if the state isn't going to protect its own people, but instead is going to basically feed them to the mob, what chance would a juror have? And now, since the trial, it's come out that exactly some of the jurors were thinking just that. They thought that they could be basically visited by angry mobs. And you can't blame them. We had everybody from the mayor of the city of Minneapolis to the president of the United States getting on the media and basically declaring the desired results of this trial. You had Maxine Waters walking stereotype, whipping up crowds and threatening riots before this happened. We could not have a fair trial. Derek Chauvin didn't get a fair trial. He didn't get a fair trial in Minneapolis. He probably couldn't get a fair trial, in the Aleutian Islands at this point, given the atmosphere in the country. And that's something that we need to be concerned about. The American justice system is broken from top to bottom. It's been broken by our elected officials, by the unelected people who run the media, and so forth. And at this point, my advice to poor Kyle Rittenhouse is flee the country. I don't think Kyle Rittenhouse can get a fair trial. I don't think the two gentlemen in Georgia who were arrested for the Ahmaud Arbery death can get a fair trial. In fact, we've just had the Department of Justice add hate crimes charges to their case. And shockingly, these people have been in jail for more than a year. They have not been given bail, even though all kinds of people, in the COVID crisis, right, they were letting child molesters out when COVID came around. But somehow they can't let these two men out, even though they have deep roots in the community and they're no flight risk. I just don't think that anybody can get a fair trial in America today, especially given who's running the government now.
And this is Keith, Greg. The question is, what has changed? You know, it used to be, for example, in the South, we had a grand tradition of jury nullification where a juror could say, I'm not going to let this go down. And one person could hang up the jury and result would be a mistrial. It doesn't seem, you know, I've heard it said that China has a state-run media, but we have a media-run state. I think the media, everything else, the government, the jurors, the judges are reacting to pressure generated by the media. Do you agree?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I think aside
from just dismantling the existing media, I don't have much of a solution for that. That might be the solution, is simply to dismantle these media organizations. One thing that has to happen is we have to be able to hold these people accountable for lying. Journalists lie and people die. The George Floyd riots were based upon a journalistic hoax. There was never any evidence that race played a role in what happened to George Floyd. Derek Chauvin just didn't grab some random black man and decide to murder him. He responded to a police call, and George Floyd was the guy that they called the cops on, and he was high as a kite, and he certainly could not be allowed to go about his business. He was in his car when the police arrived. He was bombed out of his mind on the brink of a, dying of an overdose. And the powers that be apparently think that Derek Chauvin should have allowed him to just drive off unmolested. That's complete madness. You know, Chauvin did the right thing, and his life has been ruined for doing his job. And it
sends a very clear message. Over. Right. Well, what is happening, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, even
what
even
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
We have this delay that is a problem.
Even if he gets acquitted, even if he got acquitted, this had turned his life upside down. Even if it's overturned on appeal or there's a mistrial, his life has been turned upside down. When you're falsely accused of something and your name is dragged through the mud by the entire public, you can't get your life back at the end when all the lies come out. Let's just hope that he's bitter and angry enough that he sticks it to the system that has done this to him for the rest of his life. That would be a good use of his time.
Well, look, the social consequences of all this are really frightening and daunting. Think about, for example, if a black person broke into your home now. If you lived in a majority-minority community, or if you lived up in a place that is Minnesota Nice, one of these left-wing whitetopias like Oregon or Minnesota, would you dare even pull the trigger on somebody? It'd be like South Africa. You know, that's why these people get chopped up by machetes in South Africa, because they know that if they defend themselves, they're going to be arrested by a black cop, tried by a black judge before a black jury, and put into a black prison with a black warden.
We got music playing. We're going to take our first break of the evening. This is exactly why I wanted Greg Johnson on this show. We gave it a good treatment last week. He really crystallized it. Great commentary from Greg Johnson, and we'll be right back. More.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, little Q. The calm before the storm. By a friend of Medjugorje, the strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, little Q, the calm before the storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Searching, searching, every night and day. If we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
From one heavyweight guest to the next, from Roger Devlin in the first hour to now, Dr. Greg Johnson this hour. Greg Johnson is a world-class commentator and analyst, and Countercurrents is one of the crown jewels of our shared cause. Please support the work there at counter-currents.com. Always a rewarding experience for your staff and crew here at TPC, as well as the audience at large when we collaborate with Greg Johnson. And this is, in fact, what this program was created for nearly 17 years ago, to get the ideas and the thoughts and the reflections of guests like this out to a wider audience. And I've known Greg for nearly that entire run. And we're talking tonight about current events and news. Obviously, in that last segment, Greg put a nice capstone to our coverage, or at least the immediate coverage of the fallout from the Derek Chauvin, George Floyd verdict. But, of course, Greg, the next George Floyd is only a day away, and I was just in the commercial break just sort of jotting down just the ones I could think of off the top of my head, where you have the media painting certain black criminals as if they would have been the next CEO of a Fortune 500 company or an astronaut if their lives had not been derailed by systemic racism and they were forced to go into lives of crime.
Or candidates for sainthood.
Right. So, and it goes back, I think this tradition was started in terms of its recent manifestation with Michael Brown, and the Ferguson situation. Obviously, going back just over the course of the last year, you had the criminal who got shot at the Wendy's parking lot during the George Floyd riots for going for the officer's taser. You had the Breonna Taylor. Once again, what was going on with Breonna Taylor? She was engaged in drug sales with her boyfriend who was shooting at cops, and she got killed in the crossfire. You mentioned Ahmaud Arbery, and I was going to make mention of that as well, how now hate crimes enhancements after a year in jail. They still haven't gone to trial, these two white men, but now hate crime enhancements have been levied by Merrick Garland's Department of Social Justice. Just in the last week, though, just in the last week, Adam Toledo, Dante Wright, and now this one, Greg, Andrew Brown Jr., 180-page rap sheet. Andrew Brown Jr., 180-page rap sheet, resisting arrest, killed by police, and the media is feverishly trying to spin him into the next George Floyd This has certainly become a pattern.
What has happened, I guess the capstone is this, Greg. What has happened, what has changed in society that suddenly every black person who is either killed or handled heavily by the police, if it's a white policeman, then it's front page news?
Well, the short answer is there's a lot of mischief going on here. The Black Lives Matter is, an ultra-left, quasi-Marxist, terrorist agitation organization. They use political terror, riots, and so forth to get their way. What do they want? Basically, what Black Lives Matter wants is they want it to be safer for blacks to commit crimes and harder for white police to arrest them. What's the predictable result of that? The predictable result of that is exploding black crime. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. It's been happening since Ferguson. There's a word for it, the Ferguson effect. We should call it the BLM effect. My thoughts about this are pretty simple. It's obvious what the results of making it easier and safer for blacks to commit crimes will be, more black crimes. It's obvious what the result of making it harder for police to arrest black criminals will be. Namely, there'll be fewer arrests. The cops will basically spend their time writing parking tickets and avoid dealing with the George Floyds of the world. Everyone knows what the results are. These people can't claim that they don't know what they're doing. Why are they doing this? Well, they're doing this obviously because they regard black criminals as a kind of biological weapon of mass destruction. These people are being unleashed. The underworld is being unleashed. Why? It's being unleashed to basically soften society up for some kind of ultra-left takeover. This is their end game. They want some kind of basically a chaotic, broken down society that's weak enough for these crazies to take over. I don't know what comes after that. Hell on earth, probably. But it's got to be stopped. And it could have been stopped. It could have been stopped by the Trump administration. They should have declared BLM a terrorist organization. Well, they had the power to do it. They should have declared Antifa a terrorist organization. They should have used all the federal and state law enforcement agencies that are at their disposal to tear these organizations apart and jail their leaders for terrorism. They should be in Guantanamo right now. Instead, they are buying million-dollar homes. They're collecting billions of dollars of tribute from the big corporations. And they are pushing this mischief that can only lead to more crime and misery. Their goal, I think, is obviously social chaos and a society weak enough for them to take control over. Again, I don't know what the end game is past that, but I do think that since what's happening is so utterly predictable, that it hasn't escaped their attention. This is what they want. They want more black crime. They want more chaos in society.
Well, there's another aspect that you didn't talk about, and let me just say that this. Another consequence of all this is exodus of white policemen from the police force. And I don't think that is...
Absolutely.
And basically what we're seeing is a new caste system instituted in America where blacks are the new Brahmins and whites, particularly white males, are the new untouchables. And whites, you know, what the Brahmins do among themselves is of no consequence to the untouchables.
So if a Brahmin kills another Brahmin.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's like Sly and the Family Stone said, that's a family affair, okay? But on the other hand, if an untouchable dares to strike a Brahmin, that threatens the entire fabric of society. And everybody, you know, that is a serious matter. And that's what they're trying to do, I believe. I believe they're basically it's a racial dispossession strategy that I think is at the heart of it.
I'd like to get Greg's response to this. So all of the names that I mentioned, they varied between petty street criminals to either career or professional criminals. These people were not credits to societies, but rather quite truly detriments to it. All of these martyrs, these people who have become saints, it's really almost become a quasi-religion now. But it's not the inverse of, or rather, it's not a case of what you would have seen in John Grisham's A Time to Kill, where you just have evil white people going out and killing innocent black people. These people were not that.
I don't think there's a shortage of people like that causing it, really, I believe. But the fact that there are not these Klansmen out here doing stuff, they've got to find some violence against black people. Well, the violence is done by police trying to enforce the law.
Has been able to spin these people as if they were saints and if they were the most benighted among us. And you've got it's so bad. You've got white people out as leading the charge in some of these Black Lives Matter rallies. Greg, your reaction?
Well, first of all, I my question is this. Can't they find one innocent martyr? Do they have to just find criminal scum and lie about them? Can't they find a single innocent victim of police brutality?
No.
Apparently they can't.
Emmett Till is hard to find.
There's practically none. Yeah, there's practically none. Virtually all of these people so far, all of these martyrs have been scum, basically. They're not great people. Miracles will not happen if you pray to them. They're just human garbage. And they are being turned by the media into saints. And it's disgusting to see how impressionable people are.
And that's a great place to put pause on it, because I couldn't agree with you more. And the music's playing. We're going to take a quick time out. We're back with Greg Johnson for one more second. Stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
President Biden selling his vision of America to a Georgia audience Thursday was disrupted by protesters chanting, "End detention now and abolish ICE," in reference to U.S. Immigration Enforcement Agency. "I agree with you," Biden told the demonstrators at the drive-in rally in Duluth. "I'm working on it, man. Give me another 5 days," end quote. It's not clear what the Democrat president meant. A New Mexico police officer got back up and returned fire after being shot by the alleged killer of a state trooper in February. Las Cruces police officer Adrian De La Garza performed a pit maneuver to stop the suspect during a pursuit after the suspect allegedly killed New Mexico state police trooper Darian Jarrett after a traffic stop. Newly released body cam video shows Omar Felix Cueva shooting the officer after the pit maneuver. The officer quickly gets up and fires at Cueva. Cueva was killed during the shootout with officers. Thanks for listening, and TGIF, we are USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn, and I'm in the best shape of my life. I love working out hard every day, but I turned 60 this year, and working out can cause some serious aches and pains. I was commiserating with my buddy Jay Schrader, the Super Bowl champion and former Raiders quarterback, about the challenges of staying in great shape for anyone over age 50. Jay said I had to try SonsOfLibertyCBD.com, and it would heal my body, mind, and soul. He was right. No more aches and pains. I feel like $1 million. Finding quality CBD, not easy, but Sons of Liberty CBD, highest quality CBD I've ever seen. CBD is not pot. It won't get you high. It's 100% legal. It's 100% American made. CBD is mainstream, and it works. For my listeners, SonsOfLibertyCBD.com is offering a discount of 15% off every product if you use the code WAR15 at checkout. Even better, you can combine this discount with your subscription discount for 25% off. Please support veteran-owned, service-disabled, small business, Sons of Liberty, CBD.com. Just say WAR15 to get 25% off.
After Rudy Giuliani's apartment was raided Thursday, the former New York mayor and Trump lawyer has started his own campaign. Wendy King from the Pacific Northwest USA Radio News Bureau reports.
During his first televised interview since his New York City apartment was raided by federal agents over allegations he violated lobbying laws by doing business in Ukraine, former President Trump's one-time attorney Rudy Giuliani is now speaking out, trying to clear his name.
I have never represented a Ukrainian national or official before the United States government. I've declined it several times. I've had contracts in countries like Ukraine. In the contract is a clause that says I will not engage in lobbying or foreign representation.
He spoke on Fox. He says he could have erased the evidence they took, but kept it because he says it will clear him of any wrongdoing.
The Kentucky Derby is officially back and returning to its traditional date of the first Saturday in May. 20 horses will race tomorrow. Big hats are a yes. Wearing denim is a big no-no. USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
We're back with Dr. Greg Johnson. Be sure to check out and support counter-currents.com. That is one of the content creators of our movement that really sits at the tip of the spear, counter-currents.com. Cannot overstate my level of endorsement for the work that's going on over there. A slightly related topic, we've got one more segment with Greg, and that is, Greg, Joe Biden's joint address to Congress this week. For me, the biggest takeaway was this quote, and this is a direct quote. Biden said, "We won't ignore what our intelligence agencies have determined to be the most lethal terrorist threat to our homeland today, white supremacy terrorism." And so those of us who have the ability to reason and to apply logic and to actually just use our eyes to see things, we will have noticed, of course, that Black Lives Matter terrorists, and I do call them terrorists. I don't think that that's hyperbole at all. I don't think there's any other way you could appropriately describe them except to use the word terrorist. They have committed billions, literally billions of dollars worth of damage to property and to persons during an unchecked year, a full year of rioting, looting, and arson that shows no signs really of dissipating. So Biden, though, wants us to believe, or wants the world to believe, or to pretend to believe, that it is actually people like me and you and Keith Alexander who come on a program to engage in an adult conversation about the issues. We are the real terrorists, not the people who are actually engaging in acts of lawlessness. Your take on that and the Biden address overall?
Well, I agree with you completely on this. It's a complete joke. The fact is that the country has been under the heel of Black Lives Matter and Antifa for a year now, and there will be no cutoff for this. Why will there be no cutoff for this? Because there will always be black criminals, and black criminals will always have unfortunate encounters with the police. There's never any shortage of black criminals, which means there's never going to be a shortage of pretext for Black Lives Matter to riot. And we simply have to take that into account. We need a system that is not held hostage to rioting all the time. We need a press that goes along with preventing rather than pouring gasoline on social unrest like they're doing. So it's just a complete lie. You and me talking about this are not a threat. The threat is Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Everybody knows that. And so when Biden says stuff like this, it's simply a lie. It's simply out to lunch. But he's announcing an agenda, an intention to persecute people, not for terrorism, but for their thoughts. And while at the same time ignoring Antifa and Black Lives Matter for terrorism, terrorist behavior. We can't live with these people. We can't have this guy in office. It was terrible that he got elected. He didn't get elected. He stole the election. It was terrible that the system failed and allowed the election to be stolen. And we really have to fight tooth and nail against all this nonsense. The attack on Rudy Giuliani, all of this is transparently politically motivated. We now have highly politicized secret police that are basically turning a blind eye to real crime and persecuting regime dissidents. This regime has not a leg to stand on in criticizing countries like China and Russia. Actually, China and Russia are healthier countries than the United States at this point. So I think we have to basically focus on this. We need to get everybody upset and angry about this. The trouble is, though, that we just don't have decent political leadership. Republicans are so weak. This wouldn't be happening if Republicans hadn't been so weak during the Trump administration, and that includes Trump. Donald Trump, bless his heart, he could have called a screaming halt to a lot of this by simply getting up there and using his bully pulpit to share some relevant crime statistics, that blacks are not being gunned down en masse, innocent black people are not being gunned down en masse by evil, racist cops. It's just not true. The media has people thinking that thousands and thousands of cases like this happen every year. They don't happen at all. It happens so rarely, it's a statistical fluke. The media has lied and gaslighted the public into these meltdowns, and they're gaslighting blacks into rioting. We don't have strong leaders on the right to stop it. There's a great poem by W.B. Yeats called The Second Coming. There's a pair of lines in there that really get me. He says, it's about a society falling apart, and he says, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. That's what we have today. The worst people in America are filled with passionate, raving intensity, and the people that we think should be standing up for truth and justice and sensible policies, and most of them are Republicans, they lack all conviction. They're too weak to stop this. They're terrified of being called names. America is burning, and the defenders of law and order and decency are terrified of being called names. We need stronger leadership to call a halt to this, and I just don't see that leadership in the mainstream Republican Party, sadly. And until sensible white people start ginning up some passionate intensity of our own to oppose this madness, it's just going to continue. And we have to recognize that if we cannot match the intensity of the left, the moral fervor of the left, they're going to beat us. This position that they represent is a vanishingly small minority position. Most black people don't believe that George Floyd was murdered. Most blacks don't think it would be good to abolish the police. Even blacks realize that this is craziness. It is a tiny minority, intensely wound up and incredibly influential. They have their fingers in all the leading institutions of society. And we have to gin up a counterforce that not only can oppose them in intensity, but also eventually sweep them out of their institutional power.
It's all about race, Greg. Let me just say this. This is racial dispossession. What Biden is talking about is racially dispossessing whites from police forces, racially dispossessing whites from the military. That's a movement. This is the only cases
they want to
of
disarm
black
white
criminals
people.
Being killed are when it's a white cop on a black criminal. You never see anything where a black cop kills a black criminal and it's a big celebrated cause.
Well, I just want to say this in closing with about a minute remaining. We'll give Greg the last word. Greg, you never disappoint. This has been a fantastic conversation and interview. Take it away. Last minute's all yours.
Well, I do think that we have to have a counterforce. And if we have a Republican administration in, the last thing we need is for these people to say, okay, well, you know, the enemy controls the media, but you know the ink was signed on the contracts and no checks bounced, so we can't do anything about it. We have to dispossess these people. We have to think in terms of a clean sweep of our leading institutions. We have to root out the intelligence agencies, root out the media, root these people out of power. What we should be doing to the left in America is what Henry VIII did to the Catholic Church in Great Britain. He dispossessed them. He took their wealth and power away from them, and that was the only way that he could secure his reign, and that's what we need to do. We need to get over this libertarian attitude that we can't use the state for the good of our people, and we need to actually use the state against these mega corporations, against these corrupt networks, and against the Democratic Party, which is a criminal organization at this point. We need to crush these criminal organizations, and that requires a whole different model, a whole different kind of leadership on the right, and I just don't see many prospects for that with current Republicans.
Well, that's right. It doesn't exist yet, but I am hopeful. We will always do our duty, no matter how it's going to play out. But I don't think we're gonna go out like this. I think it will turn. I don't know what the catalyst will be. I say this on every interview I give on other programs. We may not see the mountaintop, but let us at least see the valley.
Well, of course, Greg cited Alden. Let me cite Elliot. This is the way the world will end, not with a bang, but a whimper. We've got to have somebody that is willing to call out our enemies on a racial basis. The left has chosen the battlefield of race. They know that they can reach the broadest audience. You can have a 50 IQ and distinguish a white person from a black person. That's what they're basing their entire political strategy on.
Counter-currents.com. Greg, great work tonight. Can't wait to talk to you again. Godspeed.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Let's hang on.
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
Right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Being there with your child and being there for your child are two completely different things. One denotes a simple presence, which is a start, but can also be accomplished by someone other than you.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
See, that sheep did a fine job of being there with the child, but it didn't do a very good job of being there for the child. Now listen to the difference an involved parent can make.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
I'm not very good at algebra, but do you have any English questions? Because I done real good in English.
Oh, Mom.
Okay, let's take a look.
Okay, so the algebra problem didn't get solved, but something better happened. Mom was there for her child. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Back to get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're enjoying Quintessential TPC tonight. And it is Quintessential, a Quintessential broadcast. Me and Keith talking about the news of the day and special topics with fantastic guests, as we have done this evening with Dr. F. Roger Devlin and Dr. Greg Johnson, respectively. I am calling an audible right here and now for the rest of the show. I think I have been texting during the commercial breaks, and we're going to shift gears in the third hour. You know what we're going to do, Keith? We're going to have an encore. We're going to have an encore. We're going to extend our Confederate History Month series for one additional week. We had intended to do 2 hours on it last week, which was the last week of April. But with the verdict being handed down, we spent a little extra time, obviously, breaking that down, and that was necessary. But I think tonight we're going to do the third hour. We're going to do one more Confederate History Month hour, one more week, one additional week. That's what we're going to do in the next hour. So that's a different plan than we had when we started the show tonight, but I feel just led to do it. If the spirits move me, that's what we're going to do. And so that's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it next. But with regard to Greg Johnson was talking about, any follow-ups to that? Now, I have a special announcement I want to make mention of here at the bottom of this segment before we go into our third and final hour, but I want to give you a little time to reign. Greg had a lot to say, and it was all important, but I want to give you the chance to respond to it.
Well, I put this cherry on top of the whole conversation. Remember that James Carville said famously when Bill Clinton was running for president in 1992, "It's the economy, stupid." Well, all of these police brutality episodes are all about race. You never have a white perp with a black policeman coming down on him. You never have a black policeman getting after a black suspect. It's always a white policeman and a white suspect. And it fits right into that narrative I was telling you about the new caste system in America, where blacks are Brahmins and white males in particular are untouchables. That's what this is all being done for. It's done to increase racial polarization. I really do think that the left is angling towards a race war. That's what they would like to have happen. We've got to be very cautious in how we handle these things. This is what they want. They've got the whole mechanism of society now, the judicial system, as we found out in Derek Chauvin's trial, the legislative group, the executive branch. Merrick Garland, thank goodness he's not on the Supreme Court, but you see now what we would have gotten had Obama succeeded in getting him onto the Supreme Court. We have a social justice warrior, an anti-white social justice warrior, and all of this I knew from the very beginning in the civil rights movement. They initially portrayed the left as being for racial reconciliation. I knew that was baloney. They were for racial polarization from the very beginning. Look at what Israel Cohen said in 1912, that race was the best platform upon which to have a Marxist takeover in America. That's what they're doing. And it's really playing out now. Just watch that. Yeah, don't hold your breath waiting for an episode of police brutality where a white perpetrator is victimized by a black cop, or a white perpetrator by a white cop, or a black perpetrator brutalized by a black cop. It will always be the same racial scenario. And we were talking about Time to Kill, you were earlier, you know, the John Grisham book.
Remind them the plot of that movie and how it relates to what the world we actually live in.
Well, what it was the first John Grisham book. And he was pitching himself to the Jewish leadership of the publishing industry in New York at the time. And he said that it was based upon a true story. Well, it was based upon a true story, but I know some of the lawyers that were involved in that original true story. And in the true story, it was not a group of white Klansmen-like troglodytes kidnapping, raping, and killing a 12-year-old black girl. It was just the opposite. It was a white victim, a white 12-year-old girl being kidnapped, raped, and killed by a group of blacks, okay? this is the, you know, that, and I guess you can still say with a straight face, if you're in the publishing industry, this is based on a true story, but the truth of the story is that it was changed to support this anti-white racial narrative that has been going on for a long time. I think A Time to Kill came out in the early 90s or something, or maybe even the late 80s. But nonetheless,
it was mid-90s, actually. Yeah,
mid-90s. But nonetheless,
late 90s, actually.
You see, the groundwork is being laid. White people are these demonic, persecuting, racially prejudiced people. Black people are pure as the driven snow, only righteous, only holy, and everything that they do, if it's negative, it has been provoked by white racism.
Well, the plot is absurd. The plot is two Klansmen in the late 90s, mind you, two Klansmen. This was set in current time. It wasn't a movie that was made in the 90s, but was set in the 60s. It was a movie that was made in the 90s and set in the 90s. And in this movie, you have two Klansmen in the late 90s. That already is absurd. Who are driving around in their pickup truck with the Confederate flag on their pickup truck, and they see this poor little black girl who's so poor in the late 90s that she has to walk to the grocery store to get groceries and walk them back to her house. And when they see her, they fall upon her, they rape her. I can tell you with a great degree of certainty that that scenario, which they made a feature movie out of, it was a fictitious movie, of course, but I'm telling you, that scenario probably has never occurred, not once, ever in real life.
Yeah, that's like, or if it did, it's like Halley's Comet and comes by every 75 years or something like this. But see, that type of thing, that's racial slander, racial defamation. There are lots of white liberals that have found that that's
the
golden path.
The look, again, you mentioned this and Greg mentioned it. Look at the statistic. Donald Trump, Greg was right. Donald Trump could have trotted out the statistics even by their own apparatus, the FBI. If you want to look at interracial rape, there's some statistics that are going to totally disprove the premise of that movie.
The number of interracial rapes, white on black, almost every year is less than 10. Less than 10 means that it could very well be zero. Less than 10 incidents don't register on the Justice Department's radar, on their computer algorithm. But you see, nonetheless, these leftists want to drive this narrative, white's bad, black's good, regardless of the overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And they're using this to demonize you, and then they're coming after you. This is and what this will do, it will enrage the lumpen proletariat that they are looking for, the coalition of the other against white people. And by doing that, that's the golden path to control, political power, control, and wealth, and everything else that comes along with it. That's why they're doing this. We have become the enemy. The founding stock of American society and civilization is now the great Satan, according to our media, our Jewish-run and dominated media. Let's just bring it out. There, that's the problem. As we've said, in every left-wing movement, the foot soldiers might be black, brown, yellow, women, homosexuals, you name it, transsexuals, but the generals are always Jewish. And this is what is happening now, and that's, people need to be very clear about what is happening. If it were not for the media constantly beating this drum, playing this drum beat, none of this would ever have happened.
Well, and of course, they would say that what Keith just mentioned was a very anti-Semitic statement, to say that whatever anti-Semitism is, to say that Jews control a disproportionate amount or have a disproportionate amount of power and control over the media. Well, they say they do in their own publications. And so what we did was we listened to them and we read it and then we looked into it and we found that we agree with them, that they in fact do. They weren't lying in the case.
There's an article by a guy named Stein in Hollywood, and he said
he was actually offended that more people didn't believe it because
he said, you know, there are eight major movie studios at the time, all eight had a Jewish CEO.
I doubt that's so, changed.
Yeah, and the thing is, see, they crow about that, but then on the other hand, when you point it out, Jews suddenly become just another group of white people. They're just white. That's more evidence of white control. But it's not. White Gentiles have no power whatsoever in American society today, except to be in the amen corner of liberalism.
Well, I'll say that. Now, that's interesting. So in the case of Harvey Weinstein, well, he wasn't Jewish anymore. He was just a white guy that got out of hand with the ladies. And in the case of something like the atrocities that they tell us occurred in World War II, well, that didn't happen to white people. That happened to Jewish people. You know, it depends on the context, and then and there. It could be decided who and what a certain person is. So it wasn't white people that were sent to camps in World War II. It was Jewish people. It wasn't, you know, Harvey Weinstein wasn't a Jewish mogul. He was a white mogul
Absolutely. See, that's exactly what the problems are. And Bernie Madoff was the worst thing that ever happened to finance, even though Michael Milken probably built 10 times as many people. Both were Jewish. But Madoff's great sin was most of his victims were Jewish. And as a result of that, he had to be taken out. And died recently, by the way.
I said I had an announcement to make. I'll make that at the beginning of the next segment. And we are going to extend our Confederate History Month coverage for one more week. I hope you'll enjoy it. Stay tuned. Now we got to figure out what we're going to talk about. We'll do that in the next break. Stay tuned, everybody.
Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.